This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Cotola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins.
Now, Kim Cotola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you so much for joining us for this edition of Cradle My Heart Radio. It's great to have you with us. And as you know, one of the things that we do regularly on this program is to promote and put forward the good news about the pregnancy help movement. Without the pregnancy help movement, my message to women that we need to uphold life, that we need to choose life, that abortion is not the answer. That message isn't possible unless we have a strong and vibrant pregnancy help movement, which can offer a true choice, a true alternative to abortion for women for whom the pregnancy presents seemingly insurmountable problems at times. But the pregnancy help movement is not seen as a solution. In fact, there are many that would shut it down altogether. And recently in the state of California, there was some extremely difficult news for pregnancy help centers, where a law went into effect January 1st of 2016 that pro-life pregnancy centers had to promote abortion or face some serious fines. And joining us to talk about this is the founder and president of the Pacific Justice Institute, Brad Dacus. Brad, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be in the program. Thank you.
PJI has a network with hundreds of volunteer affiliate attorneys and handles more cases on the West Coast than any other organization of its kind, working to defend religious liberties and parental rights. So what's really at stake with this case and with this ruling, this new law in the state of California, Brad?
Well, it's actually much broader of an impact than people realize when it comes to the First Amendment and free speech rights of individuals and organizations. Because what this law effectively does is it compels a private religious pregnancy clinic to have to advertise speech, have to advertise something that totally goes against everything that they believe in their purpose for existence, which is to have a large advertisement sign. So when women walk in, they see a sign saying that where they can have a free or low-cost abortion, the phone number to call. It circumvents everything they're trying to do. Now, many people say, well, I'm pro-choice, so I'm pro-abortion. I think, that's great. Well, the issue is whether or not the government can compel private individuals or private organizations or ministries to have to say something that totally goes against what they are, what they believe. And if the government can get away with this, with these wonderful pregnancy clinics trying to help women, then they'll be able to get away with it in many other ways and scopes across the country and ways we won't even imagine till in the future.
The irony is that this law is known as the Reproductive Fact Act, standing for Freedom, Accountability, Comprehensive Care, and Transparency. And the law mandates that reproductive health care centers post or distribute a notice that the state of California offers free or low-cost access to contraception, prenatal care, and abortion programs. And let's talk about that aspect of it, first of all, as why that's problematic. If a pregnancy help center, for example, doesn't want to give information about contraception, as I understand it, and maybe we should back up and talk about what the mission of the pregnancy help centers is. We've talked about it a lot on this program, but, in light of this ruling, pregnancy help centers are giving information about abortion. They are giving information about contraception, but they're not promoting it nor referring to abortion providers. So what does this law actually compel them to do, Brad?
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point. And in fact, I've heard it said before, well, shouldn't women have a you know of their option to have an abortion, I'm going to say, I'd like you to please let me know of the name of one a woman who doesn't know what an abortion is and the fact that it's legal in the United States. I mean, please show me one person out there that doesn't know that. So they women already know it, and these pregnancy centers, they do a great job making women aware of it. But these advertisement posters go beyond that to actually help promote an abortion by trying to sell the woman on the idea of where she can get a free one, a low cost one, dial this number. It's an advertisement. It's a promotion. And so while we have pregnancy clinics centers who do deal with the abortion element as one of the options and works through all the options, which is the responsible thing to do, which Planned Parenthood doesn't do, that's one thing. It's another thing to require them to advertise and promote women to have an abortion when they first walk into the door before they ever get to talk to anyone or get any kind of responsible counseling. That's exactly what Planned Parenthood and the abortion mills want to do. They're desperate for business. Abortions are going down, and they think, I think in the back of their mind, if we can force this sign to be right there, then many women will see it, write down the number, and then just leave instead of getting really good comprehensive counseling as to what their options are.
I understand that there are certain candidates on the presidential field right now that are campaigning on the idea of rolling back the Hyde Amendment, which prevents government money from paying for abortion services. Tell me about the situation in California that allows the state to say you can get a free abortion at the cost of the state of California in light of the Hyde Amendment. I mean, I'm not a legal expert at all, but it seems to me like what's the exception, or what is the legal situation there?
Yeah, well, it's not federal money we're talking about. We're talking about state money, state grants, and using California tax dollars from Californians to pay for the killing of unborn babies aborted in California, for those who allegedly could not afford to have an abortion. It's sold as the easy way out. It's the easy solution. It's not going to cost you anything, or it's low cost. Taxpayers will pay for it. And the reality is, the real need for advertising should be with Planned Parenthood, because they don't give all the options. They try to make it seem like an easy way out. And of course, we know statistically it's not an easy way out, and it's a plague for women for the rest of their lives, dealing with those scars and pain and hurt and their realization later on of what they've done.
So California will pay for an abortion, and they want those who are trying to offer alternatives to abortion to inform everybody that California will pay for an abortion. In other words, why is it not incumbent on the state of California to do their own advertising, to do their own public health awareness campaign? Is this really a matter of the pregnancy centers offering people incomplete or somehow unsafe or illegal messaging? There's been
right.
a canard out
yeah,
there
yeah.
for a long time, Brad, that the pregnancy centers are deceptive and that they, you know, employ scare tactics and they don't give women all the information. And, I mean, how much of that is this law aimed at trying to reinforce versus the reality that they're there to offer something very different than abortion?
Right. Yeah. And that pretext is what the opposition abortion industry uses, as they try to contend that false information is given to women. No, there's no false information given. There's no claims that of scare tactics that are unvalidated in terms of, they're just given helpful, factual information. So that's part of it. Of the propaganda that we've seen play out, and part of trying to justify this legislation, but the reality is the fact that it has no place and it has no need, because of the fact that there are abortion mills, Planned Parenthood, who will gladly take women's money and do the procedure. The key question is whether there's going to be truly options available for others to be able to to take advantage of those options.
One judge ruled, as I understand it, that even though there is a First Amendment concern, public interest favors ensuring that California women are fully informed as to their reproductive health care options. And it seems to me that the state of California ought to be engaging with OBGYNs or with family practice physicians, or, you know, some other means of getting this information into women's hands if they feel like it's so important that
right.
every woman in the state of California needs to hear it, right?
Right, right. Let me get back to that point. I think it's real important. In the recent decision dealing with Hobby Lobby and contraceptives, the Supreme Court held that and found in part of the arguments that if the government – if this was really a compelling state interest, for example, the issue was for women to have contraceptives through insurance. If this is really a compelling state interest, then the government can take care of that. The government can provide it. The government can make it available. In the same way, the same principle I think will apply to this as well as this moves through the courts. I think in the end, the Supreme Court, if they end up hearing this kind of a case, and which they very well might. We'll find that, you know, hey, if the state of California finds this to be such a compelling interest for women to know about where they can get free or low-cost abortions, well, then the state of California can pay to advertise for it and to distribute that information via the state of California, not on the backs of private, religious, nonprofit organizations that are truly loving and caring about women and trying to help them know all their alternatives. And I think that that's a real important point from a First Amendment perspective. If, in fact, there is a compelling need for this, I think the courts will find, as they did in Hobby Lobby, that the government has other avenues to get out that information and meet that alleged compelling need.
So I've heard some reporting on this that says, look, this is nothing more odious than businesses needing to post a poster about labor rights in the workplace. Is it just that simple, or is there something more that the centers are compelled to do?
Yeah, well, it's apples and oranges, because labor rights in the workplace have nothing to do with issues of a deep religious conviction, going totally against the purpose of the organization in the first place. It's very, very different than that. I think a better analogy would be compelling a church to have a large poster as to where they could go if they want to engage in a Muslim religious ceremony. I mean, I think that's a much more closer analogy. You know, the government may say there's a compelling need for people to be to promote diversity and awareness.
Hmm.
Well, let the government do the advertising. Don't compel private individuals that have a totally different purpose and to have to advertise instead. Another example would be Alcoholics Anonymous. If the government, you know, finds and declares for some reason they think that alcohol is great for for a healthy heart, and they want to promote people to drink one or two glasses of red wine every day, and they compel every business to have this big poster, and it includes Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe Alcoholics Anonymous should be able to say, you know what, that's not our purpose. That goes totally against who we are and what we believe. We're not going to put up your big advertising poster. And I think that the courts would uphold that would uphold the rights of Alcoholics Anonymous in that situation. The whole question is, should the government be able to compel their speech in the mouths of individuals and ministries that totally do not believe in that speech? The First Amendment, and that's why the First Amendment's really on trial here. The First Amendment has very little power if we say, yes, you have the freedom to speak what you wish as long as the government approves it and doesn't compel you to say the opposite. And that's what this case is all about.
And it's really incredible that the action so far, the centers that PJI are being represented by, sought an injunction that they wouldn't have to comply with the law, that they, you know, needed some relief from this. And there were a couple of judges that said no to that injunction, if I got it right. And bring us up to speed on what has happened legally with this case.
Right. Yeah, we were the first to file our challenge to, in court against it. The judge, who was an Obama appointee, in a very weak decision, she, you know, acknowledged there are some definite First Amendment issues here. You know, she went back and forth, but her final decision was to deny the injunction that we were seeking to protect these wonderful pregnancy help centers that we were that were representing without charge. The other judges that have heard other complaints have similarly denied the injunctions. So what this means is that we're going to be having to take this to the Ninth Circuit, and then we'll also have to prepare for a full trial on the merits and hopefully get a solid motion for summary judgment so we can expedite this matter and get this to the Supreme Court as soon as possible. I think there's a very good chance it will go to the Supreme Court because of the fact that there is conflicting case law already. The Second Circuit struck down the city of New York, which had a very similar posting of information in their pregnancy help centers and clinics, and that was struck down as unconstitutional. Similarly in Baltimore, similarly in Austin, Texas. So I think that we have a very good chance the Supreme Court will take this up because it will be conflicting case law. And I think this Supreme Court, with at least five justices, assuming one of them doesn't resign in the next few months and get replaced by this president, I think we have the votes needed to prevail.
Our guest is Brad Dacus, the founder of Pacific Justice Institute, where he serves as president, and it's a network of hundreds of volunteer affiliate attorneys handling more cases on the West Coast than any other organization of its kind, and they are tackling this Reproductive Fact Act that California has put into place as of January 1st, and the fines for those centers that do not comply they couldn't sustain them. Let's talk about that too, about, you know, the teeth that are in this law.
Oh yeah. It's, the fines would literally shut them down. And so these clinics are in a terrible quandary. It's not like they can sort of take a few hits, you know, in a year and, just pay the piper. They can't, they are in a position where they're going to either have to compromise and have a big sign advertising where you can kill your baby, your unborn child, or they just have to close their doors. And that's just a terrible situation to be in. That's why we were very hopeful that we'd be able to get the injunctive relief, which I could see we were close to getting it, but we didn't. And I think that we're going to be in a situation that is going to warrant continued litigation, like I said, all the way up potentially to the Supreme Court, to finally get the relief that's needed. Unfortunately, we're out of the Ninth Circuit, and that's a very, very difficult circuit. We have very liberal judges, a lot of Obama appointees that, are very hostile, to the sanctity of human life and the rights of religious institutions, to have, their religious freedom rights protected.
So what would have to happen for a fine to actually be levied? Would someone have to file a complaint, or are there investigators involved here? What's the likelihood of these fines actually being enforced?
Oh, very likely, very likely. Planned Parenthood and their cohorts will not hesitate but to plant people to go in and to check and to see if these things are up. If they're not, if these posters are not up, then they'll file complaints and they'll be fined. Vehemently they'll be fined. The California Attorney General Kamala Harris, she's very much supportive of this of Planned Parenthood and what they're trying to do. So I think that it'll be swift and quick, and we'll see the fines being levied without hesitation.
Brad, I want to give you a chance to comment on something here, because one of the ways that people in the pro-life movement have allowed ourselves to be silenced, and I say this from experience, I had an abortion in the late 1970s. I suffered in silence for over 20 years until a spiritual solution became real in my life, and I began to speak truth about what abortion is and what it does to people. And as I did that, the backlash was very swift because I had a position in media at the time, and you know there were people who were saying, "Oh, she's politicizing it," and you know, and that I allowed that to back me off on certain statements and on certain ways of engaging on this issue for a lot of years. And I think that there are a lot of people who say, you know, the old your rhetoric that says you're playing politics with women's lives. The reality here is that the people behind this legislation are literally playing politics with women's lives as well as the lives of unborn children in the state of
right.
California. I want you to talk about that, about how people are using the law and the courts as a bludgeon against vulnerable people.
Oh, it is. It is. It's exactly what's happening, especially like the state of California. Our legislature has very little respect for freedom and liberty as opposed to furthering agendas. They have the power. They have all the positions they need to do it, and they've been very zealous, very aggressive on pushing for things that that are not necessarily in the best interests of all parties. I mean, you know, for example, we're fighting a law that lets boys who have gender identity dysphoria go into girls' locker rooms, showers, and showering with girls. It's clearly not in the best interest overall of all parties concerned. But that kind of political dogma is so powerful that they're enacting these kinds of laws. And of course, this one that we're just talking about is another classic example where their agenda of furthering abortion. Abortion interests and the abortion mills and Planned Parenthood is far overreaching than rationally sitting down and looking at a healthy balancing of the interests of all parties concerned. If that was their concern, that is to make sure women are aware of their options, then the legislation would have been balanced and required these posters to also have the phone numbers for pregnancy help centers and have them posted by Planned Parenthood in their facilities. But that was not a part of the legislation.
Wow. So, and let's talk about this, the fact that, okay, if fair is fair, are we really going to be talking about taking people and mandating not only what they have to say, but then taking them into territory that, as you pointed out, is completely antithetical to what they're doing. I know that, you know, when the pregnancy help movement began making a very strong impact, and as you noted in the very beginning of our conversation, abortion numbers started going down. They are continuing to go down. It also comes up that whether or not deceptive practices are happening, that pregnancy help centers aren't regulated. They aren't licensed. There's nobody doing any oversight. But the reality is that the abortion industry has less regulation than, as I've heard it put, than veterinary facilities.
That's absolutely correct. The abortion mill lobby groups, Planned Parenthood, et cetera, they are so strong and powerful that their interests of furthering what they do trumps the compelling need for true health and safety regulations that other medical facilities have to employ. So it's true. There's a clear bias at the expense of women, at the expense of quality of medical care. If it was truly about women, then this law would have had a requirement that Planned Parenthood have a sign stating where women can go to get alternative, counseling and regarding their pregnancy. But that's not what this law was about. It's only pointed in one direction for the interests of one group, one industry, the abortion mill industry, and at the expense of women. And it's a terrible shame to see this take place because women in the end are the ones who are going to pay the price for not truly having their interests looked after.
Brad Dacus of the Pacific Justice Institute, I hope everyone listening will pray for the case to be decided justly and for your efforts to prevail. And I think it's so commendable that you've taken it on without charge to these centers that you're helping. And, Brad, I hope that we'll be able to talk again in the future and get good news about a victory on this one.
Yeah, please pray for us and the others working on this. And also, if people like to keep up with this and the other cases that we're handling, or they need help anywhere across the country, please feel free to go to our website, pji.org, pji.org. We'd love for people to get our Legal Insider weekly update.
Thank you so much. And if you didn't catch that, we've got it linked and all the information about our guest, Brad Dacus, at our website, which is cradlemyheart.org. Now stay with us. Coming up on Faith Radio, we'll highlight some of the stories of the life issue in the news and take your phone calls as well. Phones are open, 800-811-3003, here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken again, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
Cradle My Heart. With Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
Thanks so much for being with us. It is Sunday night once again, and here we are on Cradle My Heart Radio, and I'm glad that you've carved out a little bit of time. And I'm thinking maybe you're not a person who has football as a priority on your list tonight. But there's a kind of a sweet story that I wanted to share with you that ties into the big game. Because if you remember, I think 4 years ago now, I think the year was 2012, when Pam Tebow was featured in an ad during the Super Bowl that was sponsored by Focus on the Family. And she told her story about being advised for medical reasons to abort her son when she was pregnant carrying Tim Tebow. She and her husband were in the mission field in Philadelphia in the Philippines. And she had, she became ill. And they said that the pregnancy threatened her life as well as, an uncertain outcome for the baby. And she lost an extreme amount of weight. And it was very frightening scenario for her. But she put her trust in the Lord, and the world got Tim Tebow as a result of her faith. It was a beautiful story, and the ad became controversial because people were upset about a good story about someone who didn't have an abortion, I guess. But there's a story that is circulating about a woman who saw that ad and has introduced the world to her 4-year-old daughter. So yes, it would have been 2012. She was saved from abortion because of that story. And she writes on lifenews.com in an article that they've got posted how in February of 2010, she was at a Super Bowl party with some college friends, and it was in Elmhurst, Illinois. And she remembers it because her hometown team, the New Orleans Saints, were taking on the Indianapolis Colts, but also because there was that Focus on the Family ad featuring Tim Tebow and his mom, Pam. Celebrate family, celebrate life was the name of the ad. You can still find it, by the way, on YouTube if you look it up. And she said it was unlike any other Super Bowl ad I'd ever seen because it brought the pro-life message to millions of viewers. Figures showed that Super Bowl was the first sporting event to ever exceed 100 million viewers. And the initial numbers revealed that 106.5 million people watched that pro-life commercial. And it bested the MASH finale. It was the most watched event in in TB history at that time. So in 1985, as I said, that's when Tim Tebow was, you know, just gestating in his mom's womb, and they were living in the Philippines as missionaries. The doctors believed it was a dangerous pregnancy, and the ad tells the story. And so she said, that was the night that I saw that commercial. And she said, it's really what brought me to focus on the family, because she went home, she watched the commercial again on YouTube. She explored Focus on the Family's website. She watched a video after video and then emailed them and got an email back. And within reading that email, she was almost instantly, she said, she made the decision and things just clicked. She was pregnant, didn't know what she was going to be doing at that time. But now Susan's daughter, Avita Grace, is 4 years old. And Susan says they do everything together. And she said, I think about that commercial, Tim Tebow, the people at Focus on the Family. She said, I think about them daily, and I am so grateful, because if there hadn't been a Super Bowl commercial, if I hadn't been at that party, if someone had responded to my email in a different way, I will never be able to express the gratitude and love I feel. So it's a really dear story. And I think that there's something that's really amazing about that story appearing this year and at this time with the Zika virus, because this is another story that is so frightening. And when we think about this, you know, I'm sure you've seen some of the headlines anyway, if you haven't been following the story, but the Zika-infected mosquitoes are causing medical problems and creating also, though, a theological problem for the church in Latin America and South America. Zika virus is extremely dangerous for women who are pregnant, because microcephaly or anencephaly can result. And so emergency measures have been taken in the parliament in Brazil to legalize abortion in the case of a mother who's infected with Zika virus. And, you know, on the face of it, you would think, well, maybe that's reasonable. But there is... It's just another pretext, and I don't say that lightly. If you're a person who is facing a poor prenatal diagnosis because of something that's going on with your health, you deserve all the all the support, respect, love, everything that can be given to you, because it's an extremely difficult position to find ourselves in. And I shouldn't say ourselves. I've never had to face anything like that. But we've got something posted on our Facebook page about, you know, 20 reasons to think twice about aborting a baby because of anencephaly. And this is written by a medical professional a number of years ago. And he was writing about different circumstances that had occurred in Northern Ireland. And just a few of the things that he brings up are that, number one, a baby with anencephaly is a human being. Number one. Our humanity is not diminished or degraded by sickness, disability, fragility, even a death sentence. If that's what the doctor tells you, this baby has no quality of life, predicted quality of life, or the baby's condition is incompatible with life. Babies with severe conditions are human beings worthy, like all human beings, of profound wonder, empathy, respect, and protection. Nobody is their diagnosis, including unborn children. That's the most important principle that we have to base our actions upon. And the article goes on from there. Dr. Saunders notes some other things that, you know, you might not have thought about. First of all, that medically speaking, a baby with anencephaly is not brain dead. They are not conscious, but they're not brain dead. Their brain stems are functioning, at least in part, which is why they can breathe without ventilators. A baby with anencephaly is a dependent relative. And if we start talking in those terms, certain things are ruled out as what we may do to solve our problems, right? They're off the table. A baby with anencephaly is a disabled person. And yes, there are special needs, but they are people, because personhood is not contingent upon intellectual capacity or function. But it comes with our conception as members of the human race. Palliative care is the best response to terminal illness, Dr. Saunders notes. He says we shouldn't be making judgments about the worth of other people. He says abortion for anencephaly is discriminatory, and you cannot avoid that. And one of the things that he wrote about that I was really surprised to hear is that the British Abortion Act, 1967, was driven through because of the thalidomide disaster. It was meant to authorize abortion only in severe circumstances. If you're not familiar with the thalidomide disaster, what happened is thalidomide was being prescribed to pregnant women, and they didn't know that it was going to cause birth defects so that the children would be born without limbs. It was devastating to the people who were affected by it. But abortion on demand soon became the policy. Just as in Roe versus Wade, the case in Roe versus Wade was based upon, and this was bogus, Norma McCorvey, Jane Roe, has since said she wasn't raped, but that, you know, that was the pretext that we needed this law because of, you know, seeking justice somehow, as if eliminating the second victim in a rape was just. But when we have 1% of the cases driving policy, it cannot be a good thing. So those are just some of those things to think about as we ponder this awful story of the Zika virus. And while it's been, you know, largely confined outside of the United States, there are now warnings that are occurring, especially in the Gulf states. And before the disaster strikes is when we need to resolve our hearts and our minds as to, you know, where we are going to place our faith and where we will look in times of trouble. Our phone number is 1-800-811-3003. Kim Cotola here at Cradle My Heart Radio. I'd love to hear your thoughts about a poor prenatal prognosis. Maybe you want to comment on our guest that opened the program talking about the religious freedom and freedom of speech of pregnancy resource centers in California who are being forced to promote abortion to women who come in looking for alternatives to abortion to their centers. 1-800-811-3003 is our number, and our phones are open for you as we are live on this Sunday evening, our first Sunday in February. 1-800-811-3003. There's lots to report on the Planned Parenthood undercover videos stories. Several things happened within this last week to tell you about, including the fact that David DeLeiden turned himself in Houston to law enforcement officials. It was some pro-life supporters cheering him on outside. He presented himself for fingerprinting following his indictment by a Harris County grand jury in what two pro-choice law professors have called a stunning act of legal jiu-jitsu. The shocking turn of events, as David DeLeiden, director of the Center for Medical Progress, and his colleague Sandra Merritt were both indicted while Planned Parenthood was cleared of any wrongdoing. We talked about this at the end of the program last week, and that did indeed happen. So Merritt had now turned herself in this past during the week, this week. She posted $2,000 in bail. National pro-life leaders plan to present more than 100,000 signatures calling on District Attorney Devin Anderson to drop the charges against the journalists. Anderson has faced prior allegations of bias, according to the Associated Press. Before he turned himself in, DeLeiden thanked his supporters, and he said, "I think we all know that every day that goes by that the Texas authorities don't prosecute Planned Parenthood for their illegal trade in baby parts, they're sending a message to the entire country that the state of Texas right now is open for business in baby body parts. But by your presence here today, you're all sending a stronger message that the children of Texas and the children of Houston and their body parts are not for sale." So he turned down a plea bargain. That's one of the other developments in the case. As he turned himself in, he also turned down a deal that would have led to dropping the charges against him in this case. And you know, you can understand why, because if this thing goes to trial, well, then they can't get a gag order. then the evidence has to come to light because another injunction was also issued against them for their anti-abortion activism. And this story came out just yesterday from San Francisco. A U.S. judge, actually on Friday, granted a preliminary injunction because they were going to release more videos. But the judge said no. And the National Abortion Federation, a nonprofit representing abortion providers, accused the Center for Medical Progress and its founder, David Daleiden, in a lawsuit last year of illegally infiltrating and recording its private meetings. This is Dan Levine's story, written for Reuters. San Francisco federal judge William Orrick last year issued a temporary order prohibiting the distribution of the videos, and he extended that on Friday until the litigation is over. He said he reviewed the videos and he found no evidence of criminal activity by NAF members. In other words, he didn't think that they saw anything on tape that needed to be exposed. But Catherine Short, an attorney for the Center for Medical Progress, said that they expected that ruling. The attorney for the NAF, meanwhile, said they are pleased. He said NAF members can sleep a little easier tonight. Their contention has been that this is going to stir public opinion against abortion in a way that would make abortion providers unsafe. And if that is so, shouldn't they be thinking about what they're doing rather than whether it should be shown on video? The videos released last summer purported to show Planned Parenthood officials trying to negotiate prices for aborted fetal tissue under federal law. Donated human fetal tissue may be used for research, but profiting from its sale is prohibited, the story notes. And so Daleiden's lawyers have rejected any plea bargain, and we will see whether we will see more video. It's time for a short break, and you can use that time to get to the phones and join us at 1-800-811-3003. We are here for you tonight here at Cradle My Heart Radio. Give us a call.
Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
Thanks for being with us. We really appreciate you and hope that you, that you agree that it's our job to protect unborn human life. And that as we do that, we can help women. We can actually help women. You know, the forces that would seek to profit from abortion tell a very different story, that women's rights are the main thing that need to be considered. But no one has the right to take another human life, regardless of what the law says. There are natural rights and then there are legal rights. And abortion absolutely violates natural law. And we know it in our hearts. And I speak from experience because I am a person who chose abortion. And I know the road back from it can be long and difficult, but you're not alone if you've made that choice and you're walking that road. And that is why we are here. We had a caller off the air, an anonymous caller with a question, and simply believing that every baby's life matters regardless of their health. And if there'll be special needs, but what if it's a high-risk pregnancy? What would you say to a mother who's faced with a tough choice where she will likely die if she keeps her baby? And I appreciate that question because it really reframes what we're talking about here. And my answer, I think, is going to show you that the interests of unborn children and the interests of their mothers are not in conflict. We don't have to choose the rights of one over the rights of the other. So what happens, for example, in the case of endometriosis, where to go forward with a pregnancy would threaten the mother's life? We know that abortion is the intentional killing of an unborn human life. And we know that it is wrong to intentionally kill an innocent human being, and therefore abortion is wrong. But if we go in to try to help the woman with the endometriosis, and an unfortunate effect of that treatment is that the child will die, that is not what we're talking about with elective abortion. We're not intentionally going in to solve the problem of the woman's health issue by killing the baby. What we are doing is taking a measure to save the mother's life, and an unfortunate effect will be that the child will die. And you know, sometimes when those procedures happen, the child doesn't die. Sometimes the child survives, not necessarily endometriosis, but on very difficult prenatal prognoses. Sometimes the doctors are wrong. Sometimes the physicians get that wrong. And the child's life is able to be spared. And the point here is to leave room for God to make these decisions. Because when we do that, it becomes so much easier to handle the grief and loss if the child dies. Because we know that we have a good God we can trust, and we can leave that decision in His hands, and we can trust Him to comfort us. You know, that we don't have to, we haven't compounded our grief with the guilt of having taken matters into our own hands. Generally, I'm not sure I even want to say that. I was going to say generally driven by fear. But when there is a prenatal diagnosis that's poor, or that a woman hears that the pregnancy is incompatible with life, oftentimes it's a very wanted pregnancy, and it's a very advanced stage. And I don't judge. Please hear that above all else. The individual choices that people make, I do not judge people for their individual choices. And I understand that women who want their children will make these decisions based on medical advice. But there are also stories out there, and these are the stories that I want you to focus on, and these are the stories that I want to encourage you, about people who get a diagnosis and they say, "Even so, Lord, come. Whatever you have for us, we will receive it with an open hand." We had a guest not so very long ago with a ministry called Isaiah's Promise. And the entire focus of the ministry is to help women through that circumstance. Because I'll tell you what, going ahead with an abortion decision versus allowing nature to take its course, There's no way to avoid the heartache when a child dies. By preempting the decision or preempting the outcome, you cannot short-circuit your emotional reaction to it. But again, what happens when we become the agents of intentionally ending the lives of our children, we begin to take on something God never intended us or have to bear. And one of the reasons that I wrote Cradle My Heart, Finding God's Love After Abortion, is because, you know, God is not bringing wrath down upon us for those decisions and for that pressure, and for, in some cases, with some people, straight up sin because of hard-heartedness or other individual circumstances. Even then, what God's regard for us sends from heaven is a way out. He's not there trying to keep us out of heaven. He's trying to provide us a way out of the barrier. This is the reason why Jesus came. And so, if there is an abortion in your past, even for medical reasons, it's possible to grieve, and it's possible to have peace. Possible to have peace with your child, and possible to have peace with God, and possible to have peace with yourself. Possible to have peace with your loved ones from whom you've been hiding that information, perhaps. it's possible with Jesus, our Prince of Peace. If you'd like to know more, if you'd like a copy of Cradle My Heart, please call us at 1-800-811-3003. Let us know. We'll take down the information in the studio and get a copy to you so that you can begin to see the truth and begin to live in the light of God's love for you rather than the other choices that are available out there to us when we have made that decision for abortion. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. You know, every week we try to bring you a great guest that can help us understand these issues and help you to see yourself as God sees you and to show you a future you never imagined without Him. I'm Kim Cotola. Thank you so much for being with us. Go to cradlemyheart.org to learn more about upcoming guests and find other resources and great articles to help.